Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 16th. Officials say that Midland Memorial Hospital not profiting off COVID. Midland health officials addressed accusations being made by critics. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. On Tuesday morning, the Midland health officials taking part in the morning COVID update decided to address those who believe the hospital was using a pandemic to make money. Quote, "We're not making money," Midland Health Chief Operating Officer Stephen Bowerman said. Quote, "With the last couple of months and the census spike that we have seen, we would have significant losses if it wasn't for the city and the county stepping up to provide over $4.7 million in grant money to the hospital to help cover those travel nurses that I talked about, to help cover incentive shifts for our own staff, and to provide a bonus for all of our staff below the director level," end quote. Bowerman is referring to recent votes by the Midland City Council and Midland County Commissioners Court to allocate American Rescue Plan Act funding to Midland Memorial Hospital. Quote, "We're very grateful to the City Council and the County Commissioners for approving that," Bowerman said. "Our staff is appreciative. I think our partnership with the city and the county is stronger than it's ever been. Not that it's been weak, but they've been in lockstep with us, all three of us organizations together, through this pandemic," end quote. Chief Medical Officer Larry Wilson also addressed the accusations being made in social media and by hospital critics, who have stated that hospital officials are, quote, "purposefully not using some of the alternative therapies because that prolongs hospitalizations and that makes money for the hospital," end quote. Wilson said the facts don't support that narrative. He said during the most recent months when the COVID census has spiked to record highs during the pandemic that the, quote, "net operational loss to our hospital has been twice what Midland Health experienced in previous months." Wilson said during the Tuesday press conference that when a COVID admission comes in, there's a bundled payment, a set number, so, quote, "the longer a patient is in the hospital, the more we lose on those patients, and unfortunately, COVID patients tend to have very long hospitalizations because the requirement for oxygen and other interventions that tend to overrun what the bundle would normally pay for. So, if you have any misconception that we're making money with COVID and that we're not trying to do everything we can to get past this by getting people vaccinated by using Regeneron therapy," Wilson said, "please recognize that it's not a winner for us and we're trying to make sure that our community is healthy, which is our mission," end quote. Wilson said there is no money to be made on a prolonged hospitalization or keeping MMH's beds full, but that opportunities is to get a diagnostic code that supports the admission of a patient and he or she goes home quickly. Quote, "that's a win for us, and we're not experiencing those kinds of wins," Wilson said. Bowerman also said that people need to remember that the hospital has experienced increased costs, having to pay incentive pay for employees working extra shifts and travel staff who help communities in a pinch, but also receive top dollar for their jobs they perform. Midland Health President and CEO Russell Myers told both city and county leaders that the sum of the money he sought from both entities would be used for travel nurses and incentive shifts for a two-month period. Bowerman said Tuesday that even as the COVID census is down nearly 50 over the past few weeks, an unseasonably high census of 223 inpatients at MMH remains. Quote, "So don't forget that we are dependent on outside staff to even do the work we are doing today," Bowerman said. Quote, "The fact that the COVID census is down is very positive, but we're not out of the woods," end quote. Midland Memorial's bottom line also has been impacted because it can't provide elective inpatient surgeries because of the need for beds for the COVID patients. Bowerman said Tuesday discussions will happen over the next week on the hospital's ability to do that. Quote, "If we're not providing elective inpatient surgeries," Bowerman said, "that tells you that we're still under a lot of stress in the hospital, so please remember that," end quote. Business buzz. Celebrate 1 year with Sculpt House. Enter to win one of 15 different giveaways. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. Partners Emilio Castellón and Lee Sanchez will celebrate the one-year anniversary of opening Sculpt House from 5 to 9 p.m. on Thursday at 2200 West Wadley, Suite 10. The party will have giveaways, special promotions, a DJ, cocktails, and hors d'oeuvres. Sanchez and Castellón opened the one-on-one concierge medical spa during the pandemic last year. Quote, "For the anniversary, we're trying to push it over the top a bit," Sanchez said. "We don't usually do specials because in order for us to provide the type of service we have to maintain a certain price point, I am really excited to give back for the one-year celebration with good deals and a lot of price slashing," end quote. Sculpt House will be offering 15 different giveaways during the anniversary party. Services include Botox, fillers, Kybella, B12 injections, IV therapy, skin care, skin tightening, skin resurfacing, injectables, and hydrofacials. Quote, "We are also doing promotions of, if someone purchases two syringes of filler, they get one syringe free, so they could do their cheeks and then they could get their lips filled for free," Castellón said. "That is about a $700 savings right there," end quote. They will also be offering a membership program for the first time, which will save money for patients. The membership will save clients money on hydrofacials, discounts on other services, access to private events, and access to the sculpting lounge, too. Sanchez said there will be a VIP service for clients to take advantage of. They worked behind the scenes owning a home health agency, but this is their first time putting themselves out there. Quote, "I'm a nurse practitioner and have always wanted to open a medical spa," Sanchez said. "We wanted to bring something new and unique to Midland. I have been going to medical spas for over 10 years and never felt at home because a lot of times they were combined with doctor's offices," end quote. Castellón has been very worried about opening up during the pandemic, but is glad they decided to take the leap. Quote, "We've made it a year and we're still growing," Castellón said. "As Hispanic business owners, it has been nice having great customers come in and be located in the area that we are," end quote. He added that the medical spas he went to in Dallas always felt high energy, modern, and upbeat. He wanted to bring his own flair with black and white colors and decor, which is refreshing to walk into, he said. Quote, "We devote a lot of time to each client because we are a concierge service," he said. Quote, "I took all of my experiences I have had with medical spas and took everything I loved, then put our spin on it and got rid of the rest," end quote. The medical spa also specializes in gentlemen's services for chiseled jaws, sculpted cheeks, microtox for wrinkles, a gentleman's tailored hydrofacial, and more. Sanchez said that if men are uncomfortable going through the front doors of the spa, because it is still kind of taboo among men, they can use the side entrance. Quote, I want people to feel like they are getting a new, unique experience, but it's also very comfortable to them, he added. When creating Sculpt House and creating any new service, they have made sure to not offer anything to the public unless everyone in the office is well-versed in the treatment, have had the treatment themselves, and can speak on the treatment, Sanchez said. The medical spa will soon have a body sculpting lounge, which should be done next month. Body sculpting aims to reshape an area of a client's body. The lounge will have a sitting area with coffee, tea, and a TV for a relaxing environment. Other business news. Camp Bow Wow has scheduled its grand opening date for 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on September 25th at 11310 West County Road 100. Camp Bow Wow is a doggy daycare and boarding facility that also has grooming options available. Velvet Mesquite will soon have a new shop located at 3211 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 23, next to Murray's Deli and Nothing Bundt Cakes. Until the shop is officially moved, flowers can be ordered online for delivery and pickup. Railroad Commission makes it harder for company to flare gas. Texas Railroad Commission limited an oil driller to flaring gas for just 1 year. The story was written by Sergio Chapa of Bloomberg. Getting a permit to burn excess natural gas at Texas oil wells is getting a little bit harder. Texas Railroad Commissioners limited an oil driller to flaring gas for just 1 year, as opposed to the 2 years it sought at a meeting Tuesday. The commission approved 31 other requests from oil and gas companies, including 5 more to flare gas, without any changes. Commissioner Jim Wright said a well not having a pipeline service is no longer a good enough reason to flare, the industry practice of burning off natural gas produced as a byproduct of drilling for oil. The comments mark a shift in thinking at the agency, which has been widely criticized for rubber-stamping thousands of flaring permits without requiring oil companies to come up with a plan to curb the practice. Calling flaring an, quote, unnecessary waste of our natural resources, Wright said there are too many alternatives, such as Bitcoin mining, electric power generation, and graphene production, that can be set up at remote sites to use the excess fuel. The flaring request that irked Wright was made last year by Houston-based Oasis Petroleum for one of its Permian Basin oil leases where the company did not have pipeline service. Oasis later sold all of its Permian Basin assets in a series of deals worth $481 million. Neither Oasis nor the new operator, which is listed on public records as Percussion Petroleum, could immediately be reached for comment.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 16th, 2021. Exhibitions Open Thursday by J.C. Lewis. The Ellen Knoll Art Museum is opening new exhibits Thursday night. The opening reception for Finding Alice, an illustrated look at Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, and Audubon's Quadrupeds starts at 6 p.m. The reception will feature drinks, hors d'oeuvres, and music by Funky Pocket. Finding Alice includes 35 different versions of the Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, including how different artists have illustrated the classic book. Artists such as Salvador Dali, Barry Moser, John Tenney, Andrea D'Aquino, and David Delamere have pieces in the exhibit. Since the first publication of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, the book has been translated into 176 languages. The exhibit is on view until January 2nd. Audubon's Quadrupeds showcases work created by John James Audubon. The publication of The Birds of America earned Audubon worldwide fame, and he became interested in a new large-scale project. In the early 1840s, he began working on the viviparous quadrupeds of North America with the help of his son, John Woodhouse Audubon. Many of the animals portrayed had never before been depicted or seen outside of their native habitat in the color and detail that was his trademark. The exhibit is on loan from the Lee Silliman Engraving Collection and on view until January 16th. Trans-Pecos Festival of Music Plus Love returns by J.C. Lewis. The 15th Trans-Pecos Festival of Music Plus Love, El Cosmico's Authentic Music Experience, taking place in Marfa from September 22nd through 26th, has officially announced its lineup. Those performing include Sleater Kinney, Parquet Courts, Paul Coffin, and Courtney Barnett. Additional acts scheduled include Ricky Lee Jones, Jade Bird, Michelle Nugiocello, Caroline Rose, Ben Queller, and El Cosmico Family Band with Robert Ellis and Friends. The Trans-Pecos Festival goes beyond music, offering festival goers the chance to camp in a magical West Texas venue in the desert, all while cultivating artistic engagement with a variety of unique activities, day parties, workshops, a vendor marketplace, pop-up desert spa, food trucks, art installations, and more. This year's workshops, according to a news release, include yoga, water marbling with Mercedes Rex, Mail R with La Ropa Vintage, workout with Erica Nix, meet the winemaker with Scribe Winery, a sound bath with Walker Lukens, blend your own bottle of rye whiskey with Still Austin, make your own oil pipe and drink Micheladas with Design Build Adventure, unlock the secrets of Big Bend with a discussion lead by Center of Big Bend Studies, turmeric dyeing, a mezcal tasting experience, and two kids' workshops featuring art and music. A first this year will allow festival guests to saddle up and take turns on an electronic bronco. An extra day has been added to this year's festival, and capacity has been reduced for COVID-19 safety. Vaccines or negative COVID-19 tests taken within 72 hours of the event are required for this year's festival. Each attendee must upload their documentation to CrowdPass before entering the festival. In addition, the annual Sandlot baseball game between Austin's Texas Playboys and Marfa's Los Yonke Gallos will take place Saturday afternoon. Festival goers can participate in a community breakfast benefiting Marfa Public Radio Sunday morning. A variety of beverage and food options will be available on site for the duration of the festival, including wines from Scribe Winery, Oh My Pizza Pie, Four Brothers Venezuelan Kitchen, and more. Attendees can book massages, acupuncture, Reiki, tattoos, hydration station, vitamin IV solution, and more at the El Cosmetico pop-up spa, and can also opt for a new look by booking a haircut through Cosmic Cuts. This year's marketplace will feature caddies, stop and read books, Garbo, The Indigo Prophet, For Kinship, Folk Potions, El Cosmico Provision Company, Forest and Groves Vintage, Glore, Richer Goods, Lunchroom Anxiety, Mercedes Rex, Fringe and Flare, Mohinders, Muchacho Vintage, La Ropa Vintage, West Perro, Percy's Hat Shop, and Pioneer General Store.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with more articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Thursday, September 16th, 2021. School districts sued over mask mandates, by Juan A. Lozano, Associated Press, Houston. Some of the 15 Texas school districts that have been sued in the past week for defying Republican Governor Greg Abbott's ban on mask mandates are pushing back against the lawsuits. One school district said Wednesday that it doesn't have such a mandate and isn't sure why it's being sued, while another said the lawsuit against it was filed in a cowardly manner. Keeping his promise to file lawsuits over what he has described as unconstitutional mandates, State Attorney General Ken Paxton began suing school districts last week. "There will be more to come as lawlessness continues across the state," Paxton tweeted Tuesday when he filed suit against 9 districts. At least 8 counties and cities and 87 school districts or systems in Texas have imposed mask mandates to slow the spread of the surging coronavirus, which has overwhelmed many of the state's hospitals. Before Paxton began suing school districts, various districts, cities, and counties filed at least 9 lawsuits challenging Abbott's ban on mask mandates. A federal lawsuit has also been filed by Disability Rights Texas, an advocacy organization. A federal judge on Wednesday denied the group's request for a temporary restraining order to stop the state from preventing school districts from requiring masks. Last month, the Texas Supreme Court temporarily blocked a mask mandate issued by San Antonio and Bexar County for their public schools. The court has yet to make a definitive ruling on the issue. Abbott has argued that a law known as the Texas Disaster Act gives him broad power in deciding how best to respond to emergency situations, including whether to ban mask mandates during a pandemic. In a July executive order, Abbott reaffirmed his ban on mask mandates by any state, county, or local government entity, saying wearing a mask is a matter of personal responsibility and shouldn't be imposed by the state. The counties, cities, and school districts say Abbott has exceeded his authority. The Texas Education Agency has said Abbott's ban on mask mandates is not being enforced during the ongoing lawsuits. Lawyers for Paxton's office have said that neither Abbott's office nor the Attorney General have the authority to enforce the governor's ban. Such enforcement would be up to local district attorneys. The school district in the central Texas city of Midway, which is among those Paxton's office is suing, said it has tried telling his office that it's not requiring masks. "We have respected the governor's orders while implementing thoughtful, measured, and temporary responses to clusters of COVID cases," district spokeswoman Tracy Marlin said in a statement. When COVID-19 cases get high in the Midway district, officials have created an option for a 10-day mask directive to prevent campus closures. "We use the word directive instead of mandate because it is literally not a mandate, as in it is not enforced," Marlin said. Paxton's office has also sued the district in Paris in northeastern Texas, which in August amended its dress code to require that masks be part of what students wear. During a court hearing Monday, a judge granted Paxton's request for a temporary restraining order to stop the district's mask requirement. Dennis Eichelbaum, an attorney for the Paris School District, said the district was not informed about the lawsuit or Monday's hearing until 2 hours after the hearing was over. "We weren't surprised by the lawsuit, but we were shocked at the cowardly manner in which it was filed," Eichelbaum said. Paxton's office did not immediately respond to an email seeking comment Wednesday. The Paris District believes the Texas Education Code gives its Board of Trustees the exclusive authority to govern its schools, including overseeing the dress code, and that Abbott's executive order did not suspend the education code, Eichelbaum said. Since requiring masks, the Paris District has had among the state's fewest COVID-19 absences of any district, Eichelbaum said. We're hoping that, God willing, our numbers don't start going up now that the Attorney General has successfully gone into court without us and gotten an order prohibiting us from protecting our faculty and our students, he said. FDA strikes cautious tone ahead of booster meeting, by Lauren Nevergard and Matthew Perrone, Associated Press, Washington. Influential government advisors will debate Friday if there's enough proof that a booster dose of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine is safe and effective, the first step toward deciding which Americans need one and when. The Food and Drug Administration on Wednesday posted much of the evidence its advisory panel will consider. The agency struck a decidedly neutral tone on the rationale for boosters, an unusual and careful approach that's all the more striking after President Joe Biden and his top health advisors trumpeted a booster campaign they hoped to begin next week. Pfizer's argument: while protection against severe disease is holding strong in the U.S., immunity against milder infection wanes somewhere around 6 to 8 months after the second dose. The company gave an extra dose to 306 people at that point and recorded levels of virus-fighting antibodies threefold higher than after the earlier shots. More important, Pfizer said, those antibodies appear strong enough to handle the extra contagious Delta variant that is surging around the country. To bolster its case, Pfizer pointed the FDA to data from Israel, which began offering boosters over the summer. That study tracked around 1 million people, 60 and over, and found those who got the extra shot were far less likely to become infected soon afterward. Pfizer said that translates to roughly 95% effectiveness when Delta was spreading, comparable to the protection seen shortly after the vaccine's rollout earlier in the year. The Israeli data, also published Wednesday in the New England Journal of Medicine, cannot say how long the boosted protection lasts. The FDA's reviewers, however, suggested they would mainly look to research on how the vaccines are working among Americans, saying that may most accurately represent vaccine effectiveness in the U.S. population. Overall, the data show that the Pfizer and other U.S. authorized COVID-19 vaccines still afford protection against severe COVID-19 disease and death in the United States, the agency said, summarizing the evidence. The FDA is not bound to follow the advice of its independent advisory panel, but if the agency overrules its own experts, that could stoke public confusion. Earlier this week, two top FDA vaccine regulators joined a group of international scientists in rejecting boosters now for otherwise healthy individuals, citing the strong continuing protection against severe disease. Dr. Anna Durbin of Johns Hopkins School of Public Health said it's important to understand the FDA's decision simply is whether an extra dose is safe and does what it promises to raise immunity levels. If the FDA decides the extra shot does those two things, then the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will have to decide who should get another dose. The CDC has scheduled a meeting of its own advisors for next week and has signaled it is considering a booster for certain people, such as older adults, nursing home residents, and frontline health workers, rather than a general population. The broader issue, what really is going to control the Delta variant, is vaccinating the unvaccinated, not boosters, Durbin said. More than one-third of Americans who are eligible for the shots aren't yet fully vaccinated, according to the CDC data.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the MRT for Thursday. Opinion. City and Council did right thing with donation to MMH, Stuart Doreen writes. Thank you to the Midland City Council and Midland County Commissioners Court for coming to the aid of Midland Memorial Hospital and its employees. You made the right decision. Both governing boards decided to donate a combined total of $4.8 million to Midland Health for operations. Our community is going through another pandemic. The money from the county and city will be used for three purposes, according to reporter Caitlin Randall. First, the hospital will give a 3% bonus to all MMH employees below the department director level because employees did not receive raises last year. Additionally, the funds will cover incentive pay for employees working overtime to care for COVID-19 patients. Lastly, it will be used to pay the extra cost of bringing in contract staff during the latest virus surge. That is a requirement when your census is way above the norm for this time of year and you have employees at home dealing with COVID. It stinks that COVID has run roughshod over our community for at least the fourth or fifth time during the pandemic. Yes, it will get better, but the hospital had no choice but to go out hat in hand looking for help. There are going to be haters to this type of donation from one entity to another. They will be motivated by pent-up frustration that the internet cure of the day wasn't used by their own doctors or those working inside Midland Memorial. They are even going to point the finger at Midland Health and say its leaders should have done more to promote certain therapies, even though hospital officials have been telling anyone who will listen about monoclonal antibody therapy for months. Sometimes it has been hard to hear MMH's message when the alleged smartest people won't stop talking about their solutions or themselves. You see, for those that don't know, the people at Midland Health have stood before the public for more than a year, told people the facts about what is taking place in their hospital. They have taken every question from the media and the people on Facebook during the morning conferences. While other community leaders have been able to avoid the COVID spotlight for months at a time, the leaders at Midland Health set the standard for other communities in terms of getting the facts out. Even Monday, at the Commissioner's Court meeting, Midland Health President CEO Russell Myers took plenty of body blows from those inside that Commissioner's courtroom. But instead of engaging in the fight, he made an effective argument to commissioners, including those who invited a well-known critic of Midland Memorial Hospital to speak. Well done, Russell. Some people are probably thinking that the hospital got its money and I should leave well enough alone, but this isn't about the money, it is about the opportunity. At some point, our taxing entities must become singularly focused on what is best for our community, not just their respective entities or not what makes their respective friends on Facebook happy. At the city and county meetings, what was best for Midland and our community in the midst of a one-of-a-kind pandemic was taking money given to those boards because of COVID and supporting the one place in Midland impacted the most by COVID. Still, it was the boards that came through for the hospital and the community. So again, thank you.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, September 16th. Keith Ray Job, age 73, passed away on September 9th. Keith was born in Midland to Lloyd Ray Job and Mabel Irene Layton Job on June 14, 1948. He was an officer for both the City of Midland and Midland County Sheriff's Department and was elected Justice of the Peace for Midland County. He proudly served in the United States Marine Corps and was a veteran of the Vietnam War. He is survived by his wife, Norma Zachary Job, children, Mark Job, John Davis, and Louise Davis, mother-in-law, Vera Zachary, brother, Jerry Job, and wife, Sue, as well as many grandchildren. Visitation will be Friday, September 17th, from 4 to 8 p.m., at Willowbrook Funeral Home, 1311 West Florida Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Graveside services with full military honors will be held at 9 a.m. Saturday, September 18th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland, 79705. A celebration of Keith's life will follow at 11 a.m. at Living Way Four Square Church, 415 Alta Drive in Midland, with Pastor John Wymore officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Marion Leroy Pete Hammond, age 83, of San Marcos, Texas, passed away September 12th, surrounded by family at his son's home. He was born July 25th, 1938, in Arkansas City, Kansas, raised in Kansas, Brownwood, Midland, and Odessa. Pete is survived by sons Charles Hammond of Midland, Jay Hammond of Granbury, Texas, Marvin Hammond of San Marcos, Texas, and daughter Ruth Harbin of Magnolia, Texas. He is also survived by 11 grandchildren, 31 great-grandchildren, and 19 great-great-grandchildren, and numerous nephews and nieces. Pete was preceded to death by his wife Violet, parents James and Ruth Hammond, brother Larry Hammond, and great-grandson Gage Powell. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, September 17th, at Serenity Memorial Gardens, 6800 South Texas 349 in Midland. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue in Midland. Graveside service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Aaron Moreno, age 24, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, September 7th. Viewing will be Saturday, September 18th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, September 19th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with rosaries to be recited Saturday and Sunday night at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. A funeral mass will be Monday, September 20th, at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by a son, Zayden Carter Moreno, his parents, Jose Antonio Moreno and Myrna Hernandez Moreno, one brother, Axel Moreno, one sister, Amarani Moreno, grandparents, Concepcion Moreno, Jesus Hernandez, and Maria R. Hernandez. Jesse Duke Benavides, age 58, of Midland, passed away Saturday, September 4th in Midland. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. on Monday, September 20th, at Willowbrook Funeral Home Chapel, 1311 West Florida Avenue in Midland. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery in Midland. Services are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Nancy Long, age 91, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, September 11th. No services are scheduled at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Ruth Jo Edwards, age 100, of Midland, passed away on September 12th. Viewing will be held at 12 p.m. until 9 p.m. Friday, September 17th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, September 18th, at the First Baptist Church Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Survivors include her son, James Jim Edwards. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Wade L. Gamblin, age 97, passed away Saturday, September 11th. Graveside service will be at 12 noon on Monday, September 20th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Survivors include wife Betty, daughter Linda Weldon, and son Leland Gamblin. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, I'm Kim, reading the Odessa American, and it's September 16th, 2021. Hospitals get needed funding. Council also ups garbage, water, and sewer rates. Medical Center Hospital CEO Russell Tippin on Wednesday praised the Odessa City Council for what he described as making sure the city and MCH patients have the care they need during the COVID crisis. Tippin reacted to what was a unanimous decision during Tuesday night's council meeting to give $3 million to MCH and $1 million to Odessa Regional Medical Center to help them deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. The money approved for the hospitals will come from a pot of $10,161,479.50. American Rescue Plan Act funds that the city received in July. What you saw happen last night at the city council meeting is just a perfect example of how, when you have two entities working together, that ultimately the citizens of Odessa and the patients of MCH win. Tippin said Wednesday morning, "We really appreciate the mayor and city council and the city manager, Michael Marrero, just believing in what we are trying to accomplish at the hospital and also understanding that this is something you can't budget for. It's nice to have friends on the council that understand things happen. Ultimately, this will help us all try to recover." The hospitals were two of several local organizations that requested funds. "I wish there were more we could do," Mayor Javier Jovan said during Tuesday's council meeting. "We're doing the best we can with what we have." What they did was appreciated, Tippin said, adding, "It's a blessing and something we will not take lightly, and we are just really honored that they will put their trust in us to work with us on this. Ultimately, the city has made sure our patients will have the care they need." Both hospitals have also requested help from the Ector County Commissioner's Court, which is yet to announce what they will do with their funding. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons on Tuesday said commissioners have not yet discussed their request or discussed placing it on a future meeting agenda for consideration. In other business, the Odessa City Council on Tuesday voted unanimously to raise garbage, water, and sewer rates by 2.5% each beginning October 1st when the 2021-22 fiscal year begins. Council voted to increase water, sewer, and trash rates without any discussion or comment. City administrators previously told council the rate increases were necessary to cover inflation, equipment cost, and an increase in employee salaries. The 2.5% rate increases mean that the average Odessa household will see a 0.52 cent increase in their monthly solid waste bills. Assistant City Manager of Administrative Affairs Cindy Muncy said, "Residents who live in apartments or mobile homes will see a 0.27 cent increase. Small businesses will see a $2 per month increase. The average household will see their sewer rates increase by 0.53 cents per month and residents who use 2,000 gallons or less per month will see their bills go up by 0.32 cents per month, Muncy said. Water users will also see a 2.5% increase in their bills, with users of 5,000 gallons per month seeing their bills go up by $1.92, and rates for residents who use 2,000 gallons will increase by $1.32. Qualifying senior citizens 65 years or older will pay $1 per 2,000 gallons. Muncy emphasized that the rate increases will not be used to repay a $95 million certificate of obligation that the council in August approved to pay for the rehabilitation of the city's water treatment plant. Council deliberated much longer on how to distribute the American Rescue Plan Act dollars. After much discussion and negotiating, council also agreed to allocate $5 million to the city, which will use the money to provide free COVID testing and vaccinations and pay first responders and other staff who will help with the programs. The council also agreed to reimburse the city's general fund $1 million to cover previous COVID-related expenditures. Council agreed to give the West Texas Food Bank $161,460 that will be used to help pay for the organization's $12 million planned expansion. Food bank administrators had requested $700,000. Habitat for Humanity and the Ector County Independent School District requested funds but did not receive any money. The city also requested $5 million that could have been used for water and sewer upgrades, but that request was also denied. One of the reasons council agreed to give money to the hospitals and to fund city COVID-related programs is because they can be reimbursed for the spending, which would allow the city to use those reimbursed dollars on projects that weren't funded Tuesday night. The city is also scheduled to receive another $10 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds in July 2022. City Manager Michael Marrero said. Council also voted 6-1 to give UTPB up to $280,936 to purchase and install new athletic equipment at their sports park. The money will come from the city's hotel occupancy tax fund, Marrero said. Councilwoman Denise Swanner initially made a motion to give UTPB just $100,000, but that motion was defeated. She did not explain why she preferred the smaller amount. She was the lone no to the $280,936 in funding. Swanner explained that her initial $100,000 motion was intended as a starting point for discussion. The request was for other items that were not provided before, such as the shades, Swanner said. I hope they will do as they have promised and let all citizens use the park. UTPB recently allowed several local sports associations that had been using the university's sports fields for years to remove equipment and even building structures that the sports group had purchased over the years. The sports groups decided to relocate after UTPB and city's long-term contract expired on August 31st. Leaders from the sports associations refused to sign new contracts with the university. The proposed new contracts would have required the sports groups to pay a small fee to continue to use the school's facilities, submit to annual financial audits, and give the university oversight to the use of their own fields. Several council members said they supported giving UTPB money to purchase new equipment for this facility because the city does not have a park in the east part of Odessa. Hispanic Heritage Month kicks off. Wednesday kicked off Hispanic Heritage Month, and Hispanic Heritage of Odessa marked the occasion with an MCHS Vaquero breakfast. The event at Dos Amigos was the first of three Wednesday events and the start of a month-long celebration. Each year, Hispanic Heritage Month is observed in the United States from September 15th to October 15th by celebrating the histories, cultures, and contributions of citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. September 15th is significant because it is the anniversary of independence for Latin American countries Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. Mexico's Independence Day follows on September 16th. This year's Hispanic Heritage Month celebration in Odessa has a theme surrounding education and the future of children. Nuestro Futuro Punto, which translates to Our Future Period, is the slogan for this year's Hispanic Heritage Month in Odessa. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray was the keynote speaker at this year's kickoff event. "I want to remind everyone that the future is now," Murray said. "We make investments in people every day. They may not always be children. They may be colleagues or family members. Those are the investments that we make in people that affect their future. Our board of trustees, before I arrived, created a mission statement, Our Children, the Future, because these trustees and this school district recognize that the children we serve every day, someday they may be sitting in your seats. And they may be celebrating this very event. I wonder if we are prepared for them to carry on the customs and traditions of our community. I wonder if we're prepared for them to be successful. At ECISD, we're making some investments today. 77% of the students that we serve in our community come from Hispanic communities. The vast majority of our children are Hispanic, and we are making investments in those children today. Murray continued to share with the audience the investments that ECISD was making. "We have a teaching plan that focuses very specifically on those 32,000, Murray said. "We're ensuring that our 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds can now be in school. We're investing early in children in Ector County." Murray also talked about how the school district has tackled issues related to digital divides. "Those issues have been present across the country over the past year as school districts have had to switch to online learning because of the pandemic. We ensure that every student that we serve has a device," Murray said. "We understand that technology is important. Every child has their own device, and to take that further, we're ensuring that every family has access to high-quality broadband in their homes. We're working on that today." He also talked about how ECISD has reduced teacher vacancies in the last couple of years. 2 years ago, Ector County ISD had 356 teacher vacancies on the first day of school. Murray said, "Fast forward to today and we only have 55 teacher vacancies. We're working to increase the number of teachers that serve our children." The list went on, but Murray said that ECISD knows the future is now. "It lives with the children that we serve and the families and friends that surround us," Murray said. Hispanic Heritage of Odessa President Liliana Marquez gave opening remarks at the breakfast. The mission statement for the organization is, "We strive to highlight, encourage, and acknowledge the contribution of Hispanic families and the individuals in the great city of Odessa by celebrating the history, culture, and contributions of Hispanic American citizens," Marquez told the audience. The prayer was delivered by Jeanette Fierro and Claudia Ortega. After a moment of silence, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths led the Pledge of Allegiance. Odessa Chief of Police Mike Gerke then gave a brief reflection. "Let's remember why we are celebrating today," Gerke said. "We're celebrating Hispanic heritage. All of us that were born and raised in West Texas will understand what this is. This is a celebration for the entire community." Odessa Mayor Javier Joven delivered the City of Odessa proclamation, and Judge Sarah Billingsley gave the Ector County Proclamation. MCHS CEO Russell Tippin gave a quick welcome before Murray got up to speak. This year's Hispanic Heritage Billboard will feature youngsters dressed for different professions, including president, veterinarian, United States Marine, a chemist, culture, doctor, jeweler, explorer, and fashion designer. Beneath that will be the slogan, Nuestro Futuro Punto. The billboard is on display at 2760 Andrews Highway. Education is the theme of the 2021 billboard, Marquez said. It is dedicated to the future holders of the destiny of the country. Lydia Madrigal and former Odessa Mayor Lorraine Perryman also spoke of the Richard C. Abalos UTPB Mariachi Scholarship and Mariachi Foundation Project. The foundation is named for the longtime Odessa attorney who passed away last year. The scholarship is set up in his name because he supported mariachi music, Perryman said. It took $10,000 to establish the scholarship, so I challenge everyone here today to go home to your friends and everyone who loved Richard to open up your hearts and your checkbooks to fund this foundation so that they can continue to affect children's lives through music. Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, was also honored for his work on the Leyla Hernandez Act. Hernandez was among the 7 people killed in the Odessa mass shooting August 31, 2019. Landgraf filed a bill to create the Texas Active Shooter Alert System known as the Leyla Hernandez Act. The act passed with unanimous support at every stage of the legislative process and was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott earlier this year. Landgraf credited Leyla's mother, Joanna Leyva, for the bill. While I'm humbled to be here for this honor, please note that this is a community effort and I want to make sure that credit goes to Joanna Leyva, Landgraf said. The morning's event concluded with Bill Quiros delivering the Machete Corte de Lasso. If you go, what? Hispanic Chamber Banquet. When? 6 p.m. September 6th. What? Serenata in El Pueblo Mariachi Serenade. When? September 17th throughout the day. Where? Various places. What? Don Quixote Educator. When? 6 p.m. September 29th. Where? ECISD Administration Building. What? Linda Aliba Professional Awards. When? 11:30 a.m. September 30th, where? MCM Elegante. What? Business Excellence Awards. When? 6 p.m. October 7th, where? Business Professionals Premier Ballroom, 6482 West University. What? Tamalera's Play. When? 6 p.m. October 9th, where? Hector Theater. What? AHORA Reading Program Mentors Lunch. When? 11:30 a.m. October 12th. Where? Holy Redeemer, 2633 Conover. What? Latina Charlas Outstanding Hispanic Woman. When? 6 p.m. October 14th. Where? Premier Ballroom, 6482 West University. What? Dia de la Raza Fiesta Finale. When? 7 p.m. October 15th. Where? Ahuas, 2100 Andrews Highway.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.